All right. Thank you, everyone. Welcome, everyone, to the regular meeting of the Santa Clarita Water Agency Board of Directors for July 20, 2021. I'd like to call the meeting to order. And first order of business is item two, Pledge of Allegiance. And I would ask Director Ford if he wouldn't mind reciting the pledge for us tonight. Everyone else, mute yourself or say it silently to yourself. Please, Director Ford.
Okay, everyone, ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Jeff. A few announcements. As per our normal procedure for tonight's meeting, this meeting is being conducted in accordance with authorizations and requirements contained in Governor Newsom's Executive Order N-08-21, signed on June 11, 2021. Board and staff, please mute all of your devices until you are ready to speak to avoid feedback, echoing, and background noise. Make sure you unmute when speaking and remute when you are done speaking. All board members, please turn on your camera during the meeting. Staff, please turn on your camera when speaking and turn them off when you are done speaking. Board members will be advised to use the raise hand feature in Zoom when action and discussion items are presented. I will call on each of you when it is your turn to speak. Members of the public may comment on as to items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda during item three. Members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in this agenda may do so at the time each item is considered. Members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in closed session before they are considered by the board must request to make comment at the commencement of the meeting at 6:30. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raise hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. Please do not turn on your cameras unless you are speaking during public comment, and then please turn them off when you have completed your comments. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by the last two digits of their phone number or by name. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. When you are finished with your public comment, staff will re-mute you. Please be familiar with the last two digits of your phone number. We will use the following procedure for approving items and taking public comment. I will introduce each agenda item. I will ask for questions from the board members. Please raise your hand. I will then call for public comment. The board may then ask additional questions and discuss further if necessary, including public comments if desired. Once concluded, I will ask for a motion and a second. After any further discussion, the board secretary will call for the roll call vote. Any PowerPoint presentations shown at tonight's meeting were included in the board packet and can be viewed on the SCV Water website. The board secretary will be doing attendance by roll call, and each action item being considered will be taken by roll call. Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll for attendance?
Director Atkins, are you present?
Present.
Director present. Ford, are you present?
Present.
Director Kelly, are you present?
Present.
Director Colley, are you present?
I'm here.
Director Armitage, are you present?
Present.
Director Plambeck, are you present?
Yes, I'm here.
Director Ozohowski, are you present?
Present.
Director Cooper, are you present?
Present.
Director Bronstein, are you present? Director Bronstein?
Present.
Thank you. Vice President Mortensen, are you present?
Present.
Vice President Gladbeck, are you present?
Yes.
President Martin, are you present?
Present.
Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you, April. Before we go on to item three, after reading what I just read about public comment for closed session, I should ask, April, do we have any members of the public who want to comment on closed session? They were to announce their desire to do so at the start of the meeting.
There is not.
Thank you very much.
Wait, hold on just a moment. Ms. Dunn just raised her hand. Let me share my screen here.
Yes, I do want
to. Ms. Dunn, hold on just one moment.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Ms. Dunn, go ahead, please. You may begin your public comment.
Okay, well, this one is on the closed session. When I heard you say that, I thought I would include it in my other public comment. But yes, I do have a question, a remark that I'd like to make for the closed session, and that was that if you do win your case with the water, what are you doing with that water? Will the customers that are in the immediate area receive that water? Recycling would be appropriate. My other comment was for public comment. I have a question. Do you have a policy about attendance at regular board meetings and committee meetings? If not, how many meetings can a director miss of committee meetings before being dropped from those meetings? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dunn.
All right. Then we are at then item three, public comment. Ms. Dunn has already made her public comment on closed session and her public comment on items not on the agenda. Are there any other members of the public who would like to make public comment on items not on the agenda?
It appears that we do have another public comment, and Ms. Dunn is speaking on another item under that. Just one moment. Okay. Ms. Noltmeyer, please hit star six and you may begin your public comment.
Ken Noltmeyer, yes, with regard to your closed session, the insurance company is involved with this, I understand. I see it listed. And is this strictly about the issue that is stated there? Can anybody advise me on that?
Is that the conclusion of your public comment?
Yes, for now.
Well, not for now. When you say that'll be it for your public comment.
Until later, there's a public comment.
On another item, yes. I don't think we're at liberty to discuss anything in closed session other than what's written in the agenda. Is that correct, Mr. Barron?
Yeah, that's correct. And the agenda description is what is required by law and accurately describes what will be discussed.
Thank you very much. Are there any other public comments, April?
There appears that Ms. Dunn does have another public comment, but I just want to verify that she's speaking on an item not on the agenda, so we can allow her to speak. So hold on just a moment. Ms. Dunn, the item that you wish to make your public comment on, is this an item that is not on the agenda?
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, we do.
Yes.
Okay, well, I made my comment at the same time I did for the closed session, and that was, do you have a policy about attendance at committee meetings and regular board meetings? And how many meetings can a director miss of committee meetings before being dropped from those committees? That is my comments.
Thank you, Ms. Dunn.
Thank you very much. To address Ms. Dunn's question, I don't believe there's a written policy such as that. It's up to the discretion of the board president on membership of on committee. And today we have not had an issue with members not attending committees or board meetings. So it would seem to be a non-issue. Are there any other public comments, April?
There is not.
Thank you very much. We move on to item four, approval of the agenda. I would entertain a motion for approval of the agenda.
I move Mortensen.
Second, motion, Atkins.
Motion by Vice President Mortensen, second by Director Atkins. We have a hand raised from Director Armitage.
Thank you. So as I was reviewing the minutes from the last meeting, I had to pause at the section that described our vote regarding resuming in-person meetings in September and having the staff do a presentation on technology for a hybrid model. So I paused because it listed the points that were in the original proposal, and this is on page 10 of the current agenda, which included the bullet point about no remote attendance would be provided at future meetings, which I understood from our discussion was going to be modified as being under consideration. So when I voted yes, I did so with the understanding that there would be further discussion on that point. So I'm wondering if we can change the bullet point that's in the agenda, or in the minutes, I should say, to say that options for future remote attendance will be explored.
Director Armitage, this is approval of the agenda. It's not approval of the consent calendar. So you should say that during the approval of the consent calendar.
Yes, I got mixed up, excuse me.
All right, are there any other questions before I go to public comment on the agenda? Seeing none, April, do we have any public comment on the agenda?
We do not.
So we have a motion and a section. Please call for the vote, please.
Director Osahosky, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Cooper, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Atkins, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Plambeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Colley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Ford, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Bronstein, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Armitage, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Kelly, how do you vote? Director Kelly? I'll come back to Director Kelly. Vice President Gladbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen, how do you vote?
Yes.
President Martin, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Kelly, how do you vote? The agenda is approved.
Thank you. We move on to item five, approval of the consent calendar. I entertain a motion for approval of the consent calendar. We already know there's one question from the board on it, so I need a motion for approval, and we'll talk
so
about
move, the Director Cooper.
Motion by Director Cooper.
Second, Atkins.
Just second. 1 second, Director Atkins and Director Cooper. I just want to see where that spot is that Director Armitage is speaking of. Director Armitage, would you tell me where that is?
Sure, on page 10 of the packet.
Okay.
The second bullet point.
Okay. Okay. And back to you, President Martin, there is no public comment if you were going to ask for it.
Okay, so your response to Director Armitage is the weekend.
Well, you know what, we can take it out. It does say it in the actual part that was voted on. The thing is once you guys, or once the directors hear Director or Chris Perez's presentation,
right,
that's when you would make the decision on where you're going to go. If you're going to do a hybrid, a partial hybrid, if you're going to keep everything the way it is. Right now, everything going back is the way it is until after Chris Perez's presentation, because nothing has changed yet. Once he gives that presentation, that's when the board will decide how we'll move forward is basically it. So right now, that's where it stands to come back as of September 7th. But once
that's
you hear his
that's
presentation-
That's my understanding as well.
Yeah.
Director Armitage, did you have a different understanding?
I did. I had an understanding that was, we were open to a different conclusion. Just the way it seems to me, the way it is here, it's as if we decided that we were okay with leaving that bullet point in, and I wasn't. And I thought the discussion that we had left that open.
Yeah.
Go ahead, April.
We can take that bullet point out. It does say it in the actual motion. But when we do come back on September 7th, there is timing that has to take place. And it really all does come down to what each of you vote for when Chris Perez comes back with his presentation. Because if you vote to leave everything as is, then that stands. And in the minutes itself, let me just turn back to the page. It does say that you voted to approve with Chris coming back with that presentation on the 3rd, because there was no decision made as of yet, because we don't have anything in front of us to decide on until That's he gives correct. That presentation. So everything comes back the way it does as of September 7th, the way we did it, until a decision is made, which will be on August 3rd. August 3rd.
Well, I didn't understand we were voting for it that way either. This is Lynn Plambeck, and I would feel much more comfortable if that part were out also, because we had a long discussion about not having that in there and then having the presentation. And then I agree that it might go back the other way again, but we didn't vote to have it not go back. I mean, to have it go back already.
The vote was for us to have Chris Perez give that presentation on August 3rd with the consideration.
And that part was removed from the motion.
No, it's the to have Chris Perez come back to give it.
Right, but the I don't.
We can take it out. I mean, we can take it out. I see General Manager Stone has his hand raised. Go ahead, General Manager Stone.
Sorry. Yeah. I have to be. I guess my candid view was I read it the same way as Director Armitage, that the discussion had led us to a slightly different recommendation, which was to push the opening back to September and to have the presentation from staff on what the parameters and feasibility would be of having different options for remote attendance. I don't know if we're hung up on the semantics of just we haven't made a final decision, but I think the direction was really that date and that presentation and then a future discussion for a final decision. I'm not reading back minutes. I'm not listening to a tape. I'm just telling you what my impression of that I took away from the discussion was.
April, can you read the bullet point that we're referring to?
It says attendance by members of the public at board and committee meetings will be in person only, and no remote attendance will be provided.
Okay. That's for the resumption of the meetings in September. I believe that it was contingent upon hearing the presentation from Chris Perez, and then the board will consider whether or not to move forward with some sort of hybrid program. And from what I've heard, none of the options that are under study, the timing would not allow us to even if we decided on August 3rd to go back to a hybrid in September, we wouldn't have the time to implement whatever recommendation we make. Now, Chris may come up with different information for the August 3rd meeting, but really the decision to be made on August 3rd once we hear the presentation whether we're going to go to a hybrid or not. And that's the basis of the continuation of in-person meetings. So if you feel comfortable deleting that bullet, because it's not predetermined one way or another until we hear Chris's presentation and the board considers it.
Mr. President, if I may, this is I do read it a little bit as to Director Armitage's point that if, let's say, no action were taken at all, that it would automatically not have a hybrid option. So I think maybe we could just have an amended motion for April and I just to make a clarification that that will be decided after the presentation. So, I mean, we're obviously going to go back in some form because of the legal requirements. But if what I'm hearing is correct, that the decision to decide is going to be made at that meeting, then we can just make a slight amendment to capture that and say that I think the language could be pretty easily changed.
I would be acceptable. because the way I see it, there'll be a vote to continue board meetings under the previous format prior to COVID, or there'll be a motion to continue meetings in some hybrid format, which basically is what you're saying. So I'm okay with amending that.
So is amending it taking it out? How are we amending it? Are we removing that point?
You know, I think if we have an understanding amongst ourselves, then I don't think that I need to draft it here with everybody. I think we would just make it clear that the board will make a decision to return to fully in person or a hybrid at the next meeting after Chris gives a presentation.
Well, can we bring the minutes back at a future meeting? I'm not very, very big on voting for things that we aren't really actually in front of us.
Okay, well, I could also edit it on the fly here if you like to.
And I'm fine if we delete that whole line. But
Joe, we can just take it out, and in the minutes, the new minutes, it would say amended with the removal of that bullet point.
Okay, I think that's fine.
And that's right. Just clean across.
Okay.
Okay.
Are we all right, so on that, or is that just by feet?
I think we just have an amended. I'm sorry, Director Mortensen, was your question how to proceed?
My question is, are we going to, as a board, decide to take it out or not, or is that just going to happen regardless of how the rest?
All right, the motion is amended to remove that bullet point from the minutes. Director Cooper, you have your hand up.
Yes, couldn't we just add on to that bullet that says attendance by members of the public at board and committee meetings will be in person only, and no remote attendance will be provided unless modified by the board?
That because isn't that, what we that, discussed.
I mean, just add on three words, four words.
That would work as well, Tom, because that's basically what we're doing.
That's what we're planning on doing.
And that right, would, so who made the original
motion? Since I made the motion, I would leave the motion with that change.
Adding those three words. Director Atkins, are you seconding that?
Wait, can I, and I'm sorry, I want to make sure that, because I think what we're saying, and I'm sorry to go back and forth, but I'm looking at the minutes, is that at the next meeting, the board will make a decision as to whether attendance by members of the public will be in person only and no remote, or whether there will be remote attendance provided as well. Is that accurate to what was discussed?
That was what was discussed, yeah.
Because I think that, I think the way it reads to me a little bit, and I should have caught this before, is that if no action is taken at all, that this has already been voted on, and that's what's going to happen. So I think if we make it clear that, you know, after at the next meeting, after the presentation by Chris Perez, the board will decide whether attendance by members of the public at the board and committee meetings will be in person only, or whether they will also include a remote attendance component.
That's fine. Sounds, it's saying the same, basically the same thing Director Cooper said.
I'm fine with that.
Well, if we're okay with that, that would be great, because I think that is maybe a little more direct.
Are you okay with that language, Director Cooper?
Yes, I am.
Director Atkins?
As I recall, I was actually the maker of the motion, and I'm okay with the amendment as prescribed by Director Cooper, and I do provide your second. Thank you.
All right, very good. Any other questions or discussion from the board?
Yes, I'm still confused whether we're going with Director Cooper's statement or with our attorney's statement?
We are going with the attorney's statement, and Director Cooper was okay with that.
Okay.
Joe, would you mind repeating that just so I have that correctly down?
I knew you were going to ask me. Mm-hmm. Okay, I wrote down at the next board meeting and after a presentation by Chris Martin, the board.
It's Perez.
Oh, Chris Perez.
Chris Perez, sorry. I know Chris Martin. At the next board meeting after a presentation by Chris Perez, the board will decide whether attendance by members of the public at board and committee meetings will be in person only, or will also include a remote attendance component.
Perfect. And you want me to add that to that bullet, correct?
Yeah, and I'm taking the notes here too, so I can send that to you.
I would just suggest you can say a presentation by staff.
Okay.
And also, I think there is still a hand up for discussion from a board member.
Well, I don't see it, so.
Director Colley.
It may, yes, behind my big bullet reminding or bubble reminding me of the calendar or something. So, yeah, Director Colley. Director Colley, rather.
Yeah. So I appreciate the opportunity here. My preference, of course, is to have the minutes reflect what actually happened. So we did not make a decision that the public would not be able to attend or offer comments remotely. So that decision was definitely not made. And so the minutes should not reflect that. If the minutes, if the substitution is to take out that part and put in the words that Joe suggested, I think that takes care of everyone's problem. But if the suggestion is to leave in that we made a decision that that would not happen, that would just not be an accurate, it wouldn't accurately convey what happened at that last meeting. So I just want to make sure that, that we're taking out the words that are there in that bullet and substituting them in an entirety with what Joe has said. If that's correct, I think it's fine.
I think that's correct.
That is correct.
All right. Any other questions or discussion from the board before we call for public comment?
Director Colley has his hand up.
Director Colley.
Yeah, I just logged back in because of Sand Canyon, but we're still looking at in person for the first meeting in September.
Yes. The question is whether it's going to be under the previous format prior to COVID or whether it's going to be a hybrid option that may be selected or may not be selected at the August 3rd meeting.
Correct. All right. Thank you.
All right. April, are there any members of the public who would like to comment on this item?
And there is. Just one moment. From here, let's see. Stop sharing. Okay, there we go. Hold on just a minute. I'm having a hard time getting my screen to share here. Okay, now let's try this again. There we go. Ms. Dunn, please hit star six and you may begin your public comment.
Done. I am so happy that you've caught that because I was having a horrible time when I read that thinking, well, what is really happening? Because I listened to that whole discussion between all of you, and I thought, something is really wrong here. And so I am so happy that one of the directors pointed this out because it is, it did have to get corrected. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dunn. There is no further public comment.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Would you please call the roll?
Director Planbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Atkins, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Cooper, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Bronstein, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Ozohowski, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Colley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Colley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Armitage, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Ford, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen, how do you vote?
No.
Vice President Gladbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
President Martin, how do you vote?
Yes.
The consent calendar is approved with that change.
Thank you very much. We can now move on to item six, action items for approval, which consists of one item, 6.1, approve receiving and filing the public re-notification of PFAS and PFOA notification level exceedances. The presenter will be Director of Operations and Maintenance, Mike Alford, but I suspect General Manager Stone, who sent out a letter about this earlier, perhaps would want to make an opening comment. Mr. Stone, would you like to make a comment before we turn it over to Mike?
Sure. I mean, I think Mike can cover it. This is a required notification and communication, and I think the kind of arcane details of it are best explained by Captain PFAS.
Very good. Dear Captain, please proceed.
Well, I'll do my best. I think I understand the notification levels, response levels, and PFAS more than I understand what you guys just voted on. So I figure I'm in the right spot. So if you remember back in 2019, and I'll try to make this brief so I don't rehash the entire thing, but since there are new directors on the board, I feel I at least owe you that. In 2019, we received orders from Division of Drinking Water to start sampling for a suite of contaminants called PFAS, per and polyfluoroalkyl substances. We did our first round in May of 2019. When the results came in, one well we voluntarily shut off one well for exceeding at the time was the EPA's health advisory level of a combined PFOA, PFOA, and PFOS, PFOS of 70 nanograms per liter. DDW then, so we then decided, made a decision to sample all of our wells. We were only required to sample 15, but we started sampling all of our wells in August of 2019 on a quarterly basis, and we have continued to do so since then. DDW then had a variety of updates. They adopted the 70 combined response level. They then lowered the notification levels, which they currently are now of 5.1 for PFOA and 6.5 for PFOS. And they also adopted response levels, which do not require us to shut off wells. It requires us to make public notifications on a monthly basis if we continue to use those wells if they exceed the response level. We have voluntarily shut all of our wells off that exceed the running annual average for both PFOS and PFOA. PFOA is the only one that we have wells that exceed the running annual average. When you do put in a well above the notification level, you're required to make a public notice to your governing body, which is you all, the board of directors, as well as city council and LA County Board of Supervisors. So this is an annual re-notification, and we also are bringing back three wells that are now below the running annual average for PFOA. And it's in the email that General Manager Stone sent out. You can see the wells. I can't remember the number. I had all these numbers memorized, but 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 11 wells we are notifying for exceeding the notification level, but below the running annual average response level. I think that's it, but I will take any questions if anybody has any.
I have a question. Let's see if I can raise my hand. There we go.
Okay. Thank you, Mike, for the presentation. I heard Director Planbeck. Do you have your hand raised, Director Planbeck?
Yes, I do. I had one and the other one. So when you say it's below the running average, are there times when it's above? I always get a little concerned about this averaging things because it means you can have high levels sometimes.
No, actually what it is, I guess you could have one high level if you have a bunch of low levels. You take the four consecutive quarters. So let's say we started sampling in January, then that would be the first quarter. And then we would sample in April, the second quarter, and then so on throughout the year. then you take those four samples that you collected and average them. And if they're below 10 nanograms per liter for PFOA and or 40 nanograms per liter for PFOS, then you're below the running annual average according to Division of Drinking Water. We are still above the notification level. And you can see what the levels are. They are below that 10 nanograms per liter for PFOA in the table. It's in the table on that handout.
Yeah, I have to find the handout.
Is that the, that's your end of your question or comment?
Yeah, that's the end of my question. I'll go back and look in my email, see if I can find the handout. All right. I'll look at it.
Director Atkins, you have your hand raised. I can see yours. I can't see Director Armitage. So Director Armitage, if you have your hand raised, raise it a little bit lower and wave it under my notification bubble for this meeting that we have. Okay, thanks. I see it. So Director Atkins, proceed with your question.
Mike, I just wanted to be sure there's some clarity here. Everything you've been talking about in terms of these levels are all in nanograms per liter.
Correct.
Parts per trillion.
Correct.
Which is, in to provide perspective for the board, we're talking about a couple of drops in an Olympic-sized pool. That's how fine the instrumentation gets down to. And it has the potential for error. At that concentration, there's potential for error. And I want to be sure everybody's clear on that. So am I misstating what is actually happening, Mike?
No, that's pretty accurate. I mean, in terms of the analogy, I think when I gave a presentation a year or so ago, I actually had the analogy. It might even be smaller than a couple drops in an Olympic-sized pool, but I don't recall.
Okay, I just want people to understand what we're talking about here. This is it's just tiny, tiny amounts of a pollutant we did not put in this water supply. Thank you.
Yeah. Director Armitage, you had a question.
Yes, thank you. So I have a couple questions, but before I go into my questions, I do want to say, as someone whose children has been drinking this water over the last many, many years, and even as newborns and infants, and as someone who was a pregnant mother who was drinking this water, I want to say thank you for being proactive. And when this issue, you know, first came along and you became aware of it. So I do want to state that. So my questions, so the three wells, the Mitchell 5B, the Sierra, and the W10 wells that were shut down for a while and are going back into production, they were shut down because they exceeded response levels, and then now they fall below the response level. Is that correct?
Yes, yeah, sort of. So when the response level came out, we had already had data. And so technically, when the response level was issued in March of 2020, our next quarters wouldn't start until May. So we used the existing data that we had collected voluntarily that exceeded the running annual average to shut off those three wells. Since then, we've had at least two, I'm thinking maybe three quarters that brought the average down below that 10. So I hope that makes sense.
Okay, yeah. And then I'm wondering if you've looked at, I guess, the data at a high level over time, and if you've analyzed to see if there are any trends that you're seeing, either in a positive direction or a negative direction. And then more specifically, have any of the wells that are still in production and under the response levels show increasing levels that think that we may have to shut down even more in the future?
Yeah, those are great questions. And we are starting to get enough data, you know, but we still only have about a year and a half worth of data. Maybe a little bit more, maybe about 2 years now, I guess. The trends we're seeing are pretty stagnant. They're pretty level. W10 is off the San Francisco Creek tributary. And so we were a little bit baffled why that one had levels slightly higher than a well W11, which is further up the San Francisco Creek. Likewise, P1 is all the way up on the eastern end of the Santa Clara, and Sierra is right below that. So it's not showing any real consistent understanding of where the contamination is coming from. But in general, the levels are pretty stagnant. So for example, at our N wells where we have the, and I'll say it for everybody to hear, the first ion exchange PFAS removal in the state of California, those levels are around mid-teens and they haven't really changed. They've gone up a little bit higher before, maybe closer to 20, but they've really stabilized around that 15 to 18 range.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Captain PFAS? Seeing none. Oh, I see Peter here. Go ahead, Peter.
Mr. Alvord, for the three N wells, what are the concentrations of PFAS downstream of the ion exchange treatment? Do we have any examples or results?
Great question. The S wells are right downstream and those have been off, so we are not sampling those. So there's only been some wells that we've continued to sample that we have the capacity to discharge them. You know, I think we are sampling S7 and S8, and I apologize. I just don't know the number off the top of my head. One of the things that I told General Manager Stone is I'd offer up at my expense of, you know, this ridicule and drilling of questions is to give a full-blown PFAS update in the next couple of months to kind of let you guys know where we're at and what's happening from the regulatory standpoint and all of that. So I am willing to do that. And I can, if you want to shoot me an email, or I'll remember to email you what those levels are downstream of the N wells.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions for Manager Alvord? All right, Director Atkins, what the number I recall in the part per trillion was that one part per trillion was 1 second in 31,000 years. So that pretty much did it for me. If you blinked once in 31,000 years, you missed the little part per trillion go by. So, all right, so thank you very much. Are there any public comments on item 6, April?
There are, just one moment. Ms. Noltmeyer, please hit star 6 and you may begin your public comment.
Cam Noltmeyer, this is a very interesting item for the Whitaker Burmite CAG, which I started, and I'm on the toxic board of that CAG. And I'm looking at our reports that I received from the state, because we were the ones that asked the state to step in and take a look at this problem we're having. And the latest thing I received from them, I found very interesting too, is this is PFAS monitoring results, and it refers to the way that it is now being reviewed, as you just stated. And they made a point of saying, highlighting, please note that PFAS and PFO and PFOBs are the only chemicals with notification levels and response levels. So what you're talking about and what you say, oh, just nothing, you know, is because that happened. And they were more than a little upset about that happening. That why? Because this is the only chemical that this is being done for. Now, that should make you stop and think a little bit. And it certainly has us. And you only have one plant that is treating PFAS. Go there, drive around the back of there when there is a ball game on and you can get close to the stuff that's coming out of that plant and being dumped back into the water supply right next to the river. then you might have some second thoughts about being concerned. But anyway, that's my report. I just get more and more disgusted with the shenanigans that go around when something does finally get reported and the state really starts looking into it. And I just wanted to let you know that the state is very well aware of this attempt, and it is the only chemical which has these notification levels.
Does that complete your public comment, Ms. Noltmeyer? Thank you. There are no further public comments.
Thank you, April. We can now move on to item 7, a presentation, which is a presentation on item 7.1, the Consumer Confidence Report, presented by Water Quality Supervisor Ryan Bai. Mr. Bai, proceed.
Sorry, President Martin, was that an action item, the last one?
Oh, it is an action item.
I want to make sure that we...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. That is to receive and file.
You're right. I would entertain a motion for receive and file of the, as stated on item 6.1. My mistake.
Chair moves.
Motion by Vice President Gladbach.
Derek Drozdowski seconds.
Second by Director Ozahosky. Any other questions or discussion before we call the roll? Hearing none, Madam Secretary, please call the roll for receive and file.
Director Bronstein, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Planbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Colley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Cooper, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Armitage, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Atkins, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Kelly, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Ford, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Ozahosky, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Gladbach, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen, how do you vote?
Yes.
President Martin, how do you vote?
Yes.
This item has been received and filed. Thank you.
Thank
April,
you.
April, would you mind sending me or sending around the notice again? I assume it's not the same one that's in our agenda, and I've just been through my email. I can't find it.
It was sent out this morning, but absolutely, I can resend it out to you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Byrne, for catching that one before we went on to item 7. So item 7.1, Consumer Confidence Report, as presented by Water Quality Supervisor Ryan Bai. Now, Mr. Bai, you may proceed.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for having me. Tonight, I'm going to be talking about the Consumer Confidence Report. And just kind of going over those who, what, when questions that you might have about the Consumer Confidence Report. Next slide, please. So CCR, Consumer Confidence Report, originally was called the Safe Drinking Water, or I'm sorry, it was originally called the Annual Water Quality Report in California. It was until 1996 under the Safe Drinking Water Act where that name was changed to the Consumer Confidence Report. So if you look at our actual document, we still have reporting it as the Annual Water Quality Report. It consists of water quality and other data from the previous calendar year. So this year, 2021, we're gonna be reporting on or we did report on data from the calendar year 2020. Next slide, please. So who must prepare a consumer confidence report? So the first group of organizations is all community public water systems. So that's us, that's SCB Water, that's Las Virgenes Water, that's Los Angeles District 36. And then also all non-transient, non-community systems. And these are public water systems who have the same 25 people over the previous 6 months or that consume the water over at least 6 months out of the year. So if you think of like if a school has its own well or maybe a campground where you have residents that live there almost permanently at least 6 months out of the year, that would be non-transient, non-community systems. Here at SCB Water, we have 7 regulated separately systems so that we have to report for those separately. And you'll see that when we get to the data table, it's a lot. But it takes a lot. So who must prepare the CCR within SCV Water? The primary onus is on our water quality crew. So Jenny Anderson, Dean Takashima, and myself, we're the people who compile the data. We look at the regulations, the guidance documents that come out, and make sure that our text is in line with that. But also our public outreach and Kathy Martin, they do an amazing job in taking that data and breaking down that information into bite-sized pieces that the customers can digest a little bit easier. Rather than just drinking water quality through a fire hose, they're able to take that data and understand what it means. And her group have done an amazing job these past few years in continually getting better at that. And then also our customer care group, they do a lot of the distribution, all of the distribution of the Consumer Confidence Report. And we'll get to that later. What does that distribution look like? Next slide, please. So why is there a Consumer Confidence Report? I kind of alluded to this. In California, we do everything first, right? We're the first to regulate perchlorate. We're the first to do a lot as far as regulations go. And so California, 1990, required an annual water quality report. Safe Drinking Water Act, 1996, made that a federal requirement. So everyone across the United States in those groups that I mentioned has to complete a consumer confidence report. With the Safe Drinking Water Act, 1996, it also kind of beefed up the consumer confidence report and required more specific information, made it a little bit more grand in aspect. And that's continued to grow over these past few years too. More and more goes into the consumer confidence report with the main goal, whether it was the annual water quality report or the current consumer confidence report, the goal is transparency with our customers and building community trust. I've been talking to customers for the past 17 years, and there is a common element, and that is a distrust of their public water source. And this is just one way of putting all the cards on the table, letting them know what goes into providing safe, clean drinking water to our customer base. Next slide, please. Rockefeller said, next to doing the right thing, the most important thing is to let people know you're doing the right thing. And that really is what we're doing with the Consumer Confidence Report. We are letting people know that we are doing the right thing, that we are meeting state and federal regulations with our water. Next slide, please. So what content is required in the Consumer Confidence Report? This is the next few slides because there's a lot of content in there. The first group is water sources. So we list our groundwater percentage, how much groundwater made up the water supply the last year, what our surface water percentage is. We talk about our groundwater and surface water sources. The next group is the drinking water source assessment. So anytime we bring a new well online, or if we add a new source to our drinking water supply, we have to do what's called a drinking water source assessment. And that looks at potential contaminating activities. It looks at safeguards that we must take in order to bring this water source online to ensure not only is it going to be of good quality right now, but we can ensure the quality of the water for the future. And the next thing we must include is the board meeting. So we list when our board meets, where they meet, and how to attend for customers. So if customers want to attend and ask questions, there's information in the Consumer Confidence Report about it. There's also contact information. And so if customers have questions about the data that they're presented, if they, you know, they need a little bit more information and how it's come together, and we need a source within our agency for customers to call. And that's what our water quality group does. We answer calls about the Consumer Confidence Report and try to answer customers' questions and every call we're trying to, I think Steve Cole joked around, win the hearts and minds of our customers. It's kind of tongue in cheek, but it's true. You know, we believe in the water that we're serving to our customers, and we try to relay that information and convey that feeling to our customers. Next slide, please. We're also required to have a primary drinking water standard. So these are health-based standards with a maximum contaminant level, or MCL. So we list that information in there. We're required to put microbiological contaminants in there. And that usually comes in the form of the revised and former total coliform rule. So we look at distribution system monitoring for microbiological contaminants, and we list our compliance in there. At our treatment plants, we rely upon treatment techniques, mostly in the form of turbidity. Turbidity is what we use as a gauge of how effective we are in removal of pathogenic organisms. So that information is in there also. Next slide, please. Lead and copper. So on a federal level, right now we're required to monitor in customers' homes once every 3 years. So we put our compliance with the lead and copper rule within the consumer confidence report. Sodium and hardness. Hardness is, you know, is always a concern of our customers, how hard the water is. So we have sodium and hardness information within there. There's also information on second drinking water standards. These second drinking water standards have SMCLs, or secondary maximum contaminant levels, and they deal with the aesthetics of the water. So constituents that might discolor the water, constituents that might stain plumbing fixtures or clothing, that might add an odor to the water or a taste issue with the water, those SMCLs and those standards are in there. And then from time to time, there are unregulated contaminants that are required to be put into the consumer confidence report. Case in point are PFAS. So PFAS are kind of like a pseudo-regulated group of chemicals where we have notification levels, we have response levels, but there is not a secondary maximum contaminant level. There is not a maximum contaminant level. And so there are unregulated contaminants from time to time that are required to put in there. And we put it in there for this past current consumer confidence report. And then there's quite a bit of boilerplate language. Depending on what constituents you have that you have positive results for, or quantifiable results for, I should say, there is boilerplate language that goes into that says if you detect lead and copper within customers' homes, there's language that must be included in the consumer confidence report. If you have a total coliform positive within your distribution system, there's information that you must include in your consumer confidence report. So I think that's the hardest part is the consumer confidence report keeps getting bigger and bigger because of all of this boilerplate language that's required. But you know, it's all for public knowledge and building that trust with our customers. Next slide, please. So this is our current consumer confidence report, or water quality report, 2021. So it has all the information that we monitored for in the previous calendar year. And you'll see this, I mean, this is a testament to Kathy Martin and her group and some consultants that we've used this past year, how slick and nice and professional this looks. Next slide, please. Here's a couple more pages from our consumer confidence report. You have opening from our general manager, Matt Stone, and Russ from Los Angeles County District 36. Before we came together as one entity, we all kind of played nice with this consumer confidence report. We all came together under Director Ford. When I started, Director Ford was who headed up this consumer confidence report when he worked for Castaic Lake Water Agency. And so all the purveyors and the wholesaler and District 36 would come together. District 36 is still a part of this process. Even though we are one to entity, we still include District 36 through all this. On the right-hand side, you'll see some of the graphics that have been included that show our water portfolio. Right below that is our infrastructure and conveyance systems to our customers. And below that is a graphic showing how much an acre foot of water actually looks like. These elements that give customers who aren't accustomed to dealing with water a conceptual idea of what we're talking about. Next slide, please. And this is a lot of the text. So there's a couple more pages from our annual water quality report. Upper left-hand corner has information about lead and copper compliance. Right below that is drinking water source assessment. We brought a well E17 online last year. So we did a drinking water source assessment for that. So information for that well is in there, as well as how customers, if they would like to contact us about other drinking water source assessments. That's all in there. Below that, information about organic compounds, turbidity, and our sources of supply. On the next page over, talks about our breakdown of our water percentages, how much imported water versus groundwater we serve for each one of these systems. And then below that is chemicals in the news. And for the longest time, that chemicals in the news section just dealt with perchlorate. But we have a new foe in PFAS. So there is a section in there about PFAS, the regulations behind where we are today, what we're doing about it, and how to find out more information, directing customers to our website, specifically the PFAS page. And below that at the bottom are a lot of the abbreviations that we use. And unfortunately, I think this is the part that is the hardest for customers to understand is, the quantities in which we are talking about, the acronyms that we use, the abbreviations that we use. So we try to make this in the forefront before we get to the next slide. So if you could go to the next one, please. And this is another part that is very difficult for customers, and it has evolved over time. I would like to see it shrink, but that won't happen until we have one permit from the Division of Drinking Water. So what we're required to do, and that's why you see so many of these columns, is we're required to report all of our drinking water sources individually per permit that we have. And I said we had 7 permits, so that's all in there. On the far right-hand side is District 36. Next slide, please. So here's a blown up section of that data table, because there's no way you're going to be able to ever read that through a PowerPoint presentation. Customers can blow it up on our website, but there's no way you're going to be seeing that through a PowerPoint presentation. So we kind of blew this up here to give an example of the data that we're going to be looking at and for the divisions we're going to be looking at. So on the left-hand side, the first column, you have the different parameters. So here being depicted is inorganic. So we have aluminum, arsenic, fluoride, barium, and nitrate is nitrogen. But other parameters and constituents are organics, disinfection byproducts, microbiological, clarity, turbidity, radiological, lead and copper, secondary standards, and some additional tests that we run. So those are all the parameters and constituents in that first column. The second column are the units that we're talking about. Because it's not enough to say we have 6 of something. You have to say 6 of what? It's not just 6 of aluminum, it's 6 milligrams per liter of aluminum. But in our case, here, it's less than the DLR. but I was just using that as an example. The next three columns over are the regulatory limits. So if a constituent has a maximum contaminant level, or a secondary maximum contaminant level, if it has an action level, a response level, or if there's a public health goal or a maximum contaminant level goal associated with that constituent, it's listed in those next three columns. Also in those columns is the detection limit for reporting or the method reporting limit. And as you may all know, we can't, in analytical chemistry, we can't say there's 0 of anything. We only are as good as our instruments. And so that's what those DLR and MRL levels are, is they are essentially 0. It's the smallest that we could look. with the technology we have available. And then the next columns over are we list the data per division. So we do this in a variety of ways. We have the minimum, maximum, and typical levels of constituents for those water sources. So for example, for our Santa Clarita Water Division, when we report that information is just looking at the source water associated with the Santa Clarita Water Division. It'll look at the wells that feed that system, and the minimum level is the minimum concentration amongst all those wells. The maximum is the maximum concentration amongst those wells, and the typical tends being the average concentration amongst those wells. So one thing we've tried to do and try to communicate to customers is just because the constituent you read under Santa Clarita Water Division is listed at a certain level doesn't mean that that's the only water source that they are receiving. They're receiving that source plus the water from our regional or imported divisions. And so that's listed in our consumer conference report and something that we try to convey when customers do call. Next slide, please. Next question is, when must a water system complete the consumer conference report? And so that deadline is July 1st of the following calendar year. So July 1st of 2021, we have to put out all the data from 2020. And it might sound like at first glance that's a long time. That's a far into the year to be reporting for the following year. But there's a lot that goes into the consumer conference report. First, we have to receive guidance from the Division of Drinking Water. And the guidance documents sometimes don't come out until February or March. Once we have the guidance document, we can start compiling information, putting it together. From there, it goes to our Kathy Martin and her group, where they put it into a very easily to digest report for customers to see, and goes through graphic design, and then it goes to distribution to our customers. And when we distribute it to our customers, it happens over, I believe, 5 billing cycles. So there's 5 weeks in which we distribute. So we're talking beginning or the end of May when we start distributing it in order to meet that July 1st deadline. Next slide, please. Speaking of distribution, how must the CCR be distributed? Distributed. So previously, we had sent out hard copies all to all of our customers. So it would be something like this here, where it was, highly glossy, multi-page insert, or not an insert, but a direct mailer that went to our customers. Unfortunately, a lot of times these get tossed with people's mails. All the Bed Bath & Beyond coupons and all the other mail that people end up just throwing these away. And I think the Division of Drinking Water realized that. In an effort to save paper and quit creating waste, they made a requirement about 7 or 8 years ago to allow for electronic delivery. And that's what we do now. For our customers that receive e-bills, we send a notice through email on how to access our consumer conference report when it is available. For customers who still receive paper bills, we put a billing notice in there. So rather than a whole bunch of pages that get wasted, we only have one sheet that gets put into our one piece of paper that gets put into our bills, letting customers know how to access the consumer conference report. Another option is to send a notice through a direct mailer, but we've combined it with all of our billing notices. That seems to work well. Next slide, please. So this is what it looks like on our website when you access the consumer conference report, when you click the link or you type in the link. Right now, we also have on the front page of our website how to get to this the consumer conference report. But we have the past 11 years worth of consumer conference reports for customers to review. They could download this data. or this year we have a way to access that directly through our website where they don't even need to download the full report. But yeah, it's under the water quality section of our webpage. That's where all the consumer conference reports live. Next slide, please. So here's the notification that goes out to customers, letting them know how to access the consumer conference report. And there's a lot of requirements associated with this too. The first thing you might notice is we have an English version and a Spanish version because we have a larger customer base that is primarily Spanish speaking. We are required to translate not only the notice, but the consumer conference report into Spanish. So we have one side that's English, backside is Spanish. You notice in blue there, that is the link on how to access our water quality or consumer confidence report. It gives a brief synopsis of what it is. And then below that are some other language requirements. Languages like Cantonese or Farsi don't meet that threshold in order to have a full translation. What they do require is a statement saying this notice contains instructions for you to obtain important information about your drinking water, translate it or speak it with someone who understands it. So those are the language requirements for those group of languages there. Below that is another link on how to access the consumer confidence report. And right below that is how customers can get a hold of a paper copy if they want one. They can either call our customer care group directly and request a paper copy, and customer care will distribute that to them. Or if they don't want to talk to anybody, they can rip off that bottom portion and send it in, and our customer care group will send them a paper copy. So they can either access it online electronically, or if they want a paper copy, they can request one and we will send them a paper copy. Next slide, please. So once the consumer conference report goes through that creation and put into a format that everyone can read and it's distributed, there is a requirement that we certify our consumer conference report with the Division of Drinking Water. So this takes part in a form that we fill out that says how we distributed it, to what groups of people we distributed it, what dates we distributed it, and then we upload a copy of our CCR, or Consumer Conference Report, to the Division of Drinking Water's website so they have a copy of it also. We also list good faith efforts that we do. And as you all may well know, that not everyone who receives water from us is a bill payer. You know, places like apartment complexes where there is, you know, it might go to a main corporate office, the bill might go to a main corporate office, they might not get a notice. So we're required to do some of these good faith efforts in order to kind of spread the word that a new consumer conference report is available to customers. So we do this a few different ways. We do this as we put copies at local libraries. We put a notice in the Signal. We do a lot of social media outreach. There's a variety of forms of communication that Kathy and her group do in order to kind of spread the word and let people know that there is a annual water quality report, a consumer conference report for them to read. So if they aren't bill payers, they should be able to access that, and they should be able to read that information just like a bill payer would. And that is it. Are there any questions? Next slide.
Thank you, Ryan, for your presentation. I'm sure we're going to have some questions from the directors. I see Director Atkins' hand is raised. Go ahead, PJ.
Thank you, Ryan. I'm proud to say I knew you when you worked at New Hope County Water District. Well done. And I wanted to tell Mr. Allward, who I know is listening in, even though that was a regulatory report, it sure sounded and felt like a maintenance moment to me. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Director Atkins. Any other questions for Ryan? Director Armitage. Thanks for waving to catch my attention. I can't see everybody, so thank you. Go ahead, Dr.
Angerthi. Sure. So I just want to say I'm really glad to have this presentation today, since the agency does release this really important report each year. And I think it's really important for us as directors to understand what it says and how to read it. So, and you're right, I think it can be very intimidating to, in particular, look at that one table with a gazillion teeny tiny little numbers. And it really takes time to sit and read it and try to understand it. So I appreciate you bringing this to us and explaining some of this for us. And I also agree, I think I hear constantly people saying, I'm not sure our safe is water, or I'm not sure our water is safe to drink. And so, you know, I worry that this leads people to buy more plastic bottled water than they need to, which contributes to the growing issue of massive amounts of single-use plastics, right? So I think if people can understand and trust that the water is safe, you know, that would be a big win too. So I do have a few questions. I pared it down to four. I think if you know me, and actually know I have way more than that, but I will reach out to you with the more specific ones, but I do want to ask a few here. So the first one is, you know, I have my opinion from reading the report, but I would ask you, what do you think would be a reasonable conclusion of our water quality overall after looking at the values that are in the table and comparing them to the maximum contaminant levels or the notification levels or the response levels specified for each? That's my first one. The second question is, I would like for you to explain a little bit more the column headers for Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency Import Division. What specifically is that? And then the column after that where it says Import Division Perchlorate Treatment Plant. What is that, please? Because I'm having a hard time understanding that. Third, so I compared the values in the 2020 report with the values in the 2019 report. I did take time last year to read it as well to see if there are any major differences in areas. And I did notice that for some of the levels for inorganic, organics, and some secondary standards in this year's report, they were listed as not available when they were actually listed in the 2019 report. So I'm wondering why that is. And then lastly, for the microbial coliform, it states that it's a percent positives slash percent positives slash number positives. And I'm wondering why it's listed like that, because numbers and percentages are different and tell a different story. So those are my questions. Thank you.
Well, thank you for doing your homework. These are very great questions. And luckily, I think I have the answers to all of these. So I'm not going to be stumped. You didn't stump me today. So, you know, first question, when I look at the Consumer Confidence Report, I feel that, you know, our water is safe enough for my kids to drink. It's safe enough for me to drink. And I feel confident in the values that we present, or, you know, that we meet our state and federal requirements. So, you know, that's exactly what I tell customers. I am a SCV water customer too. And I drink the water. So if that says anything, I don't know. I look at the data all day long and I feel confident in our water. So hopefully the report that we provide to our customers conveys that same information. And I think that's where Kathy's trying to build that confidence with customers. Next question is the column for import. So originally when we became an agency, the former Castaic Lake Water Agency was originally called the Import Division. So the Import Division reflects the surface water treatment plants and the perchlorate treatment plant. Since then, the board has changed the name to the regional, our regional division, but that change was already made through the Division of Drinking Water when they made a name change for us. So in the Division of Drinking Water's eyes, it's still the Import Division, even though we refer to it as the regional. And the not available question for 2020-2019. So when I said that those values reflected the source water monitoring that was done during that calendar year, due to voluntarily removing wells for PFAS, there were certain areas that didn't have any other sources other than what was listed for the regional. So it's not available because those sources were not used during that calendar year. Does that make sense? Yeah, okay. The next one is microbial positives versus percentage. So compliance for the total coliform rule depends on population. For our larger population systems that do more than 40 samples a month, the compliance is based on percentage of total coliform positives. Whereas our smaller systems, like the smaller systems in our Newhall divisions, those don't do 40 samples a month. We don't take 40 samples a month within those individual systems. So compliance for that one is based upon number of positives. Previously, under what we had had was the potential, if we had more than one positive sample, that it would be out of compliance in those smaller systems. Now with the revised total coliform rule, it's a little bit different, and there's a little bit easier way to comply with a find and fix rather than just being out of compliance. So I hopefully that answers all your questions. Hopefully I communicated that well. If you have any follow-up questions, I'd be willing to answer those.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Director Armitage. I will go on to Vice President Gladbach. You had your hand raised. I will go then after that to Director Planbeck and Director Ford.
Yeah, thank you, President Martin. Ryan, I just wanted to commend you for a great presentation, and not only the presentation, but also all your hard work and great work throughout the year in making this a safe drinking water source. I've drank it for 50 years, so I'm still here. So,
very good. Thank you, Vice President Gladbach. Director Planbeck, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to make one comment on Ryan's presentation, and that is that he said, I thought I understood him to say that we were required to email that report out. And I remember when it changed from actually having to mail it out to just mailing out a notice. And I always felt that folks might be able to get it more readily when it was mailed to them. But I understand about the cost and stuff, but I just did want people to realize that it wasn't that the state required that they get emailed notifications. We have the option of emailing, or putting like a little notice in the billing, which is what we're doing. And then, so I don't know if you meant to say that, but, and I want to say I appreciated this too, because I'm always having people ask me that. And I think I've looked at enough of them, so I understand them. And it's always good to have a little review before my neighbor comes over and says, what the heck is this? So the other thing that I wanted to ask about is, are we using, when you put the numbers in, is it a running average? So if there's a lower average, all the data is averaged? Or is it like the highest point we've ever had? Or what is in there for numbers?
Yeah, if I most misspoke on that, it's not a requirement to electronically distribute. If I misspoke on that, I apologize. It is an option. It was an mm-hmm. option that we decided to take before we became an agency, and then we've continued doing. And if the board decides that we want to do paper copies from here on out, we could do that too. It just seems to work a little better and not waste as much paper. So yeah, if I misspoke on that, I apologize. Your question is as far as about the average. The average is only looking at those sources for that calendar year, and that's the typical column header. It still lists the minimum and maximum. So hopefully, any one of those numbers by themselves won't give you a good picture of that constituent. But if you have the minimum, you have the maximum, and then you have what that average is, hopefully that paints a better picture. And that's why it's listed like that.
Okay. I had to get my glasses out to look at it. So yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Director Planbeck. Director Ford.
Thank you, President Martin. Ryan, it was great to see you again. And it's great to see, it was, the CCR was an awful lot of work years ago, and the requirements have only grown since, and the issues have only gotten more complicated. And you guys have done a great job at keeping it going and meeting all those new requirements. I really appreciate the work that's being done. And I appreciate you coming here to explain it to everybody so they get a good understanding of the level of work done. I'm a tad jealous that you have Kathy Martin with you to help put the thing out there, because of course we had to cobble together years ago, but a great job. And the public frequently asks, you know, as it's been mentioned here, is this water safe to drink? And I say, yes, the water that you drink meets all of the standards, both federal and state. And if you want any proof of that, then here's the link. And I send it off to them, you know, in the Nextdoor app or any other format. I send them the link to the CCR on the website. And so, great job. Keep it up. And it was, like I said, good to hear from you. And we'll hopefully see you again in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Ford. Are there any other director questions or comments? I don't see any hands raised. So I will, oh, there's BJ. Go ahead, BJ.
I just wanted to say nice choice of shirt, Brian.
Thank you.
There you go. Even thank you
for having me. I appreciate it. And I appreciate this, you know, being able to come here and brag about our water. And, you know, I almost said something about asking Director Ford if the torch was passed well to the rest of us handling this water quality report. Hopefully it has been, and hopefully, you know, he feels confident in his legacy is being carried on.
Very good. Thank you. I just want to point out Director Atkins was drinking water as he was making his comments. Director Ozahosky, who's a new father and wants to live long enough to see his grandchildren and perhaps great-grandchildren. So he's drinking the water, so he believes it's safe, and we do at our home as well. And so is Director Armitage. So we trust the water at SCV Water, and we all drink it. So I'll just add my words of thanks, Ryan, for the presentation. It once again, it shows the extent of work that goes on that we don't always see every day at SCV Water, and the talented staff that we have there. And it takes a team like yours to produce this report in just really the brief time that you have to do it with all the data that you have. So we appreciate it. Thank you for your effort, and thank you for your report. With that, I'll ask April, do we have any public comment on the presentation?
Hold on just one moment. Yes, we do. Jose Herta, go ahead and you may begin your public comment. Mr. Herta? Oh, he removed his hand. I'm not sure if he still has public comment or not. Ms. Dunn, please hit *6 and you may begin your public comment. Ms. Dunn?
Well, I have a comment. I thought it was kind of interesting. I wanted the report, and I didn't want to have to get it off my computer, so I called the phone number that was listed on my phone bill. And when I called, I thought this was pretty interesting, and maybe it's because they wanted to know how the information is getting out there. But the gal that I talked to on the phone was your customer service person, and she said, where did you get this information? Call me. And I thought that was kind of interesting, and the only thing I could figure is maybe because she wants to see how effective that information was in your billing. And so she did send it to me, and I was happy to get that, but I did think that was kind of an interesting question, because I think she is probably monitoring to see how well your information is getting out so that people can have this information. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Dunn. It does not appear that there is any further public comment.
Very good. Then we can thank Ryan once again and move on to item 8. General Manager's report on activities, projects, and programs. Mr. Stone.
Okay, brief departure from our water quality theme tonight. Just an update, as I'm sure you all know, that with the increase in COVID-19 cases recently and increase in the positive test percentage over the last month or so, LA County Public Health issued an order reinstating the use of masks for all persons when indoors and basically going back to the prior mask protocol that we all know well. And no other capacity or operational restrictions were added to that. So we are still operating with everybody back and using the additional mask requirement. Just for a quick statistical tidbit, the most recent positive test percentage reported from LA County Public Health tonight was 4.75% of tests coming back positive for COVID. It's one of the indicators that they've used over time because it's an early indicator as opposed to hospitalizations, which they also track. That has been steadily increasing from the low, which was around 0.4%. Shifting tracks back to water quality and continuing our theme tonight, we have a guest presenter as part of this update. At our last meeting, I promised you a presentation from our Chief Operating Officer, Keith Abercrombie, to review how SCV Water responded to a recent supply chain issue with chlorine used in some of our disinfection processes. And this presentation was made to the Engineering Operations Committee already, and it was suggested that we make it to the board. So without further ado, I will hand it off to Keith for now for that update.
Thanks, Matt. President Martin, directors, thank you. As you may recall, Matt provided an update to you mid-June about a pending supply issue with chlorine. And I wanted to give you kind of an update as to where we are now a month plus later in that situation. And I'll recap a little bit about where we were and what started it all. Around June 15th, we got a phone call from one of our neighbor water companies, Burbank Water and Power, and they were inquiring as to sources of supply for chlorine gas that they use in their treatment operations. They indicated that their supplier had just provided them with a force majeure letter indicating they couldn't or might not be able to meet for future orders, and that they had about 3 weeks supply on hand and were obviously in a little bit of a panic mode. We subsequently, almost immediately, got a follow-up call from the Division of Drinking Water, who was making the rounds calling water companies as this issue was just sort of coming to light in the industry. And so, you know, we began our due diligence as well. And so that included us contacting our various chlorine suppliers. And we have numerous suppliers because we have chlorine in different forms, whether it be liquid, gas, or solid, which I'll get into a little bit in a moment. We also reached out to some of the mutual aid organizations such as CalWARN to kind of make sure they were aware or get them aware of this issue and have them start working on it. As I said, we were in discussions with the Division of Drinking Water, the Association of California Water Agencies, American Water Works Association, EPA, and even the Department of Homeland Security was involved. We reached out to fellow water agencies such as Metropolitan, and we were involved in a number of webinars, conference calls, surveys, primarily conducted and orchestrated through AQUA, EPA, and Homeland Security. One of the tools in the toolbox was the ability to use a section of the Safe Water Drinking Act or the Defense Production Act, which would allow the Department of Commerce to issue orders to suppliers to basically focus their supplies or direct their available supplies to water utilities or other critical infrastructure entities. That really wasn't something that needed to be activated in our case. Our suppliers, we had all reached out to, and they were all already doing that. One interesting thing that you may or may not know is that only about 4% of the chlorine used in the U.S. Is used for treating water. The bulk is used in a lot of other things. So in some respects, that was good in that as suppliers were limiting and focusing things on water utilities, you know, that helped. The chlorine production in the U.S. is a very stable item normally. There have been in the past year or so, there were three sort of bumps in the road, if you will. March 2020, we all know what happened then, and the pandemic officially started, and that saw some supply disruption. February 21, there was a significant winter storm that hit the Gulf Coast and numerous facilities that are in the production chain for the chlorine products received flood damage and other problems. June of 21, which was the latest problem and sort of the most significant for us, was a facility in Washington State that produced the bulk of the chlorine materials for the West Coast of the U.S. They had some equipment failures, maybe an electrical fire, and that resulted in the disruption. So we, at the same time as all this was going on, we started evaluating our supplies, trying to understand, all right, what do we have on hand? We started trying to reach out to all of the various suppliers. I indicated before we had numerous types of chlorine. We use gas chlorine at Rio Vista treatment plant. We use liquid sodium hypochlorite at the other treatment plant, the Earl Schmidt plant. We use tablets, briquettes, different forms of a solid chlorine. And we use granular or powdered chlorine. So we started reaching out to the various vendors of all of those and determining, you know, what could we get and what do we have on hand and so forth. We were able to increase our orders, and we actually, you know, we probably had about a month's supply of most of the solid materials on hand. We were able to put in orders and get stuff brought in to where we now have between 3 and 5 months supply on hand, at least for those types of products. We then started looking at, well, you know, because it became not, it moved to where the real problem was gas. And that was going to affect the Rio Vista treatment plant, which is obviously a huge source of supply. And how do we not run out there? So we looked at what would it take to convert from gas to something else. And the choice would have been liquid or sodium hypochlorite. We located an emergency trailer that we could use for that. We worked with our crews to determine what would need to be done to make the various modifications to install the piping and the control systems and so forth to use a liquid instead of gas. Crews determined they could probably do that work in a day or two. And we then reached out to Division of Drinking Water, who would obviously have to regulate or make an approval of any changes to our treatment plant operations. And they were certainly aware of what was going on the West Coast at this point and were alerted and willing to expedite the approval process. So that was in our back pocket, as you know, we can do that if we need to. In the meantime, we decided to see if we could work, and this was more of a longer term play perhaps, but you know, we have a certain number of chlorine containers, or these 1-ton containers at the Rio Vista plant, and you store them on these metal rails called trunnions. Where they sit on these rails and they're chained down, and that's kind of where they stay until you are using them. So we ordered some additional trunnions because the facility has the capacity for more as the plant might ultimately be expanded in the future. So we ordered some additional trunnions, and I believe today our crews were actually installing those trunnions. We don't have, we haven't ordered or don't have plans yet for additional chlorine containers. But if we did do that at some point in the future, that would add about 15 to 30 days, depending on how hard the plant was running, of runtime. Another change we made almost immediately was we reduced our chlorine dose level at the Rio Vista plant by a half a part per million or a half a milligram per liter. We have a certain band of dosage that we can operate within. This was within that band, but that also allowed us to buy some more time. And then what we wanted to do, since we really weren't seeing a shortage in getting, we had talked to our suppliers of the liquid that we use at Earl Schmidt, that seemed to be available and did not seem to be readily impacted. So we made some modifications to some of our distribution piping or transmission piping in the wholesale side of things to essentially force the Earl Schmidt plant to take the main load of the demand. And so that allowed Earl Schmidt to run at a much more full capacity, thereby taking a little bit of demand off of Rio Vista and giving us a little more time still. You know, we continued to work with our suppliers. We were able to, you know, and the interesting thing in all of this, we were in the middle of changing our contracts with the gas supplier based on fiscal year and new bidding and so forth. So our old supplier was ending at the end of June and new supplier was starting the beginning of July. So we were able to get two deliveries in late June from our old supplier at the Rio Vista. Our new supplier we've been talking to and monitoring our levels, and they have assured us that we are getting a delivery between sometime. I don't know if our plant scheduled the firm date, but it will be before next Wednesday, the 28th. Currently, we have about 48 days to 50 days of supply on hand or of chlorine on hand to meet our current production rates at Rio Vista. So, and that's important because the industry is indicating that these supplies, while still tight, look like the end of the tunnel is in sight, and they expect things to be back to a more normal supply situation towards the end of August. So, you know, that everything sort of ended up working out. We were kind of in full crisis mode for a point there, and I commend Mike Alvord and Raphael at the treatment plant and the various other staff that were up to their eyeballs and trying to, you know, chase this thing down on a million different levels. But, you know, we learned some things along the way. We have some things put in place, some additional things we're going to look at doing to even further, you know, make our systems a little more robust and resilient should something like this happen in the future. But we seem to have made it through at this point. And that's all I really had as far as a report, and you have to answer any questions.
Thank you, Keith, very much for all that your team did, and I'll open it up to questions from the board. Director Armitage.
Thanks. Not so much a question, but I just want to say thank you very much for the innovative strategizing and planning that happened to avert a potential crisis, really, that would have affected the treatment of our water or the inability to treat our water. So kudos to you and your team for the incredible teamwork that you just described. So thank you all.
Excellent. Any other questions or comments from the board? I see Director Atkins is doing his applause motion. So he's happy with what you did. And I think we all are, Keith. And I think it shows the depth of our expertise that we have at SCV Water coming together as one agency. I think way back when we were created, Matt made the comment, Matt Stone did, that it's an expansion team, but he has all the first choices. And so he put together an all-star team that now is top quality in the state for my belief. And I think it shows when we're able to do things like in 2 days, switch to sodium hypochlorite with nothing but in-house staff. I think we have a very, very talented staff and led by an absolutely tremendous management team. So thank you so much for that. And I will ask April, are there any public comments?
It does not appear so.
All right, thank you. I was presuming that Matt was finished with his general manager's report, but
that is correct.
All right, very good. Thank you so much. We are, we didn't have any public comment on item 8, General Manager's Report. So we move on to item 9, President's Report. I'd like to update the board on a few upcoming meetings. The 13th annual State of the County will be held at Six Flags Thousand Mountain on July 28th at 4 p.m. I think we already had a question, maybe perhaps before the board meeting started, about have we received notification from those who registered, and I think April's going to look into that. So you'll be hearing a follow-up on that. The CSDA annual conference in Monterey is going to be on August 30 through September 2. The 2021 Economic Outlook Forecast being held at the Santa Clarita Performing Arts Center will be on September 17, 2021. And the Urban Water Institute 28th Annual Water Conference will be, at this point, it's an in-person conference and board meeting in Costa Mesa on September 8th and 9th, 2021. Another announcement, it's important to our members, is the AQUA committee consideration forms were sent out last week to the board and staff. If anyone would like to be considered for any of the AQUA committees, please notify the board secretary as stated in the email. Make sure you state your preference for committee consideration as stated in the email. The deadline is August 26, 2021. And that concludes the president's report. And I would ask April, are there any public comments?
There appears not to be any.
Thank you very much. Unless there's any questions from the board, we move on to item 10, AB 1234 reports. And I would ask, are there any AB 12? You have a number that were included in the board packet, but are there any additional AB 1234 reports? And I see Director Cooper has got his hand up. So please proceed, Director Cooper.
Just a quick one. Today I attended the AQUA Region 3 presentation online. It was on the regulations for the Air Resources Control Board, the CARB regulations upcoming for vehicles, and that'll affect all public agencies. Very interesting. Starting in 2024 to 2026, 50% of all of our vehicles that are purchased that are over 8,500 gross vehicle weight have to be SEV, zero emission vehicles. And in 2027, all of our vehicles that we purchase have to be zero emissions vehicles. There are some programs that we need to look at, and we need to start planning now for all of our fleet to becoming zero emissions. This Pacific Gas and Electric has a program to help agencies such as ours to install the infrastructure, the transformers, the charging stations, which are quite large and very expensive. But we're going to have to look at doing it at three locations or four locations, counting the warehouse. So we really need to start putting a plan together. There's only going to be so much money that's going to be available. And I'm sure Edison will be running the same kinds of projects. It'll be required by the PUC, just like it was for PG&E. But it's going to be a big change for us. This includes dump trucks, semis, our vac systems that we go out in the street and pothole with, all of those vehicles, and even forklifts and the rest of the stuff are all going to have to be electric by 2027.
Director Atkins, you had your real hand waving, then I'll get to Director of the Husky.
Yes, I too was registered for the CARB session, and Mr. Cooper did a great job describing what occurred. Thank you.
I think General Manager Stone had a question for Director Cooper, perhaps. Did you have a question for him?
Yeah, just a comment since we touched on that presentation. The board should be happy that they approved the new fleet manager position, and we have recruited and filled that. And some of you had a chance to meet our new fleet manager at Karen Dinkinger's retirement. So it is on the list.
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks.
Director Ozahosky.
Director Cooper, were there any mentions or possibilities of exemptions for public utilities or none whatsoever?
No, actually it was targeting public utilities. That's kind of their first target in the big vehicle range.
Okay. I meant to attend that meeting, but I was not able to. But, thank you for the brief.
My pleasure.
Are there any other AB 1234 reports from the board? Vice President Gladbeck.
I have a director's report, not an AB. I kept waiting until.
Okay, we'll get to that. Unfortunately, I have a few oral AB 1234s to do, and then I'll get to the director's report. If there are no further AB 1234s, I have a few to mention. I will try very much to be brief, and I apologize for making them oral. I generally always do my reports in writing. I was away this past week, so I couldn't do it that way. So tonight I'll have to report out in an oral, and I'll do it quickly. On July 9th, I attended the Delta Conveyance Board Prep meeting. The regular monthly board meetings are held on the third Thursday, but the Friday prior, three members of the board, three members of the board, including me, meet with staff to go over the agenda to answer any questions ahead of the board meeting to hopefully shorten up the meeting when we get to it. The agenda generally includes all of the regular agenda items for the board meeting. And in this particular case on the July 9th meeting, there was a closed session. Obviously, I can't report what was discussed in closed session. They were just summarizing what would be discussed at the board meeting. There's a monthly DCA report and adoption of the 2021 set budget adjustment, and also an SEC Stakeholder Engagement Committee update. Staff reports include General Counsel, Treasurer, DWR, Environmental Manager's Report, and Verbal Reports, and future agenda items. So I won't take much more time with that. But if you're interested in knowing what the DCA board is doing, you can always look at Delta Conveyance, dcdca.org, and understand, see what's going on up there. I was appointed a member of that board representing the Class 7 members, which are basically couple of members that take deliveries of state project water from the West Branch. Us and Dudley Ridge are represented in that Class 7. I'm on the board, and Dan Flory is the alternate, and he'll take over after next year. On July 12th, I attended the GSA board meeting. I think some others on our board attended the GSA board meeting, and I'm April, if I'm not required to report out, but I thought we would be required to report out, so I usually do it in writing. It was a pretty straightforward agenda. Adopted the 21-22 budget. We approved a rotational schedule for board officers, an overview of the groundwater sustainability plan public workshop on June 2. Again, the status of the groundwater model peer review, which was quite an interesting discussion, a lengthy discussion. And there was a closed session, but no reportable actions were taken out of closed session. That was July 12th. And by the way, April, these are all virtual formats. On July 13th, I did have an opportunity to have a one-on-one meeting with the DCA Executive Director, Graham Bradner. And he is taken over for Catherine Mallon, now is the full-fledged executive director for the DCA. A couple of things we discussed in my meeting with him, the geotechnical investigation and the right of entry permits. We're lagging behind in subsurface exploration because of the difficulty to get the right of entry permits, but we're making every effort to catch up with that process. One other item we did discuss, and Graham, and I've talked to General Manager Stone, Mr. Bradner is willing to come down and meet with our board and provide an overview of what's going on with the DCA. And we've tentatively scheduled September 21 for his visiting our board and making a presentation and having a dialogue with board members and answering any questions you might have about what's going on with the DCA. So more to come on that one. And then on July 15th, we had the regular DCA board meeting, pretty much the same agenda as I discussed before. And that was also a virtual format. That concludes my 1234 reports. If there are no further AB 1234s, I'll ask April, are there any public comments?
There is not.
Thank you very much. Now, Vice President Gladbach, we move on to item 11, director's reports. I know we have one from Vice President Gladbach.
Yeah, thank you, President Martin. Sorry to jump in. I wanted to make sure I got in before we went bypassed it. Okay.
No problem at all.
The JPIA's executive committee met last Friday and approved new rates for the health program. The pricing for Anthem PPO medical plans actually went down 5%. The HMO plans went up only 1.75%. Everything else was pretty much the same. One of the things I was very impressed with the staff is all of them are very proactive. And what they had done, especially in this time of COVID-19, recognized that mental health is a major issue. They actually went and started checking on their own to see how long it would take to get an appointment for a mental health appointment. It turned out it was 6 weeks plus. And so what they've done, they went out and contracted with another company called Modern Health Company to do mental health, and they get in within 1 to 2 days, which I thought was very impressive. And I really commended them for having the foresight to do that. Secondly, we got a report, or actually the captive insurance water fund, which is headquartered in Utah, is a report we put in, it's been in effect for 21 months. We put in money over that time. The annual rate of return on that is 13%. So that comes back to benefit the members of JPIA. So unless there's questions, that's all I had.
Thank you, Jerry. Are there any other director's reports? April, do we have any public comment on? Oh, do we have one from Director Armitage?
Director Kelly.
Director Armitage, proceed.
Thank you. I wanted to share something that ties into the water agency that I didn't realize initially. So the tree people are doing a habitat restoration project to restore chaparral lost during a wildfire in San Francisco Canyon each weekend. And I was able to join them this past weekend and learn about how they're doing this and how, they're watering the plants in the area who need a little help through the dry period. And the reason I'm mentioning this is because when I got home and read more about the project, I learned that SCV Water is actually a collaborator in the project, since they're providing the water to fill the buckets that the volunteers then literally walk around with from plant to plant. So they can get a little extra help until they can sustain themselves. So I was happy to learn about that. And I wanted to say I'm thankful to the agency for being part of this great project. This project helps to maintain the biological systems for a healthy watershed, since the San Francisco Creek feeds into the Santa Clara River system. So I think it's a really smart project to be supportive of and as part of a nature-based strategy. So I just want to say it's great, I think, in many ways, and I'm glad to see such a collaborative project being carried out in our community, and kudos to the agency for that. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Director Armitage. Director Kelly, you got a report.
Yeah, I'd like to know if April has sent out the affirmations to the new members of the board and possibly request that they also be resent out to the entire board for review and consideration again. At the last board meeting, I was quite concerned and upset with one director voicing their opinion about the meetings in person regarding our future board meetings, and another director pretty much attacking that individual as a hypocrite for the comments. Now, these are my opinions and nothing to do with anybody else in here, but if nothing else, I would definitely like to see that the affirmations go back out for everybody to pay attention to. Thank you.
Okay. I think your comment is noted, April. If we could do that.
Absolutely. And the new directors did receive the affirmations.
Very good. Thank you. All right. Any other director's reports? Hearing none. Any public comment on the director's reports, April?
There is none.
Thank you very much. We now will move on to closed session. We will be going into closed session. The public may stay on the Zoom webinar. The board members and appropriate staff will need to disconnect from the Zoom webinar and connect to the Teams meeting. Please refer to the login information that you received. We will meet in closed session to discuss items 12.1 and 12.2 as listed in your agenda. Members of the public and any staff may stay on the current line once closed session is over. The board will reconnect to the Zoom webinar for closed session announcements and the remaining items on the agenda. I'd like to remind the board that this is closed session and they need to be in a place where no one else in your location can hear the discussion. We will be taking a 5-minute break and then reconvening in closed session. Verizon tells me it's 8:31, so please, we will try to resume or reconvene the meeting in closed session at 8:36. So we are in 5-minute recess, and please disconnect from the Zoom and reconnect to the Teams meeting. Thank you.